session number 10409.
Mr. Gordon Hyams, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hyams?
I was born on October the 31st, 1898, in London. I think it was Randolph Crescent, that's near Maida Vale.
And where did your family live?
At that time, they lived in Gloucester Terrace, which is W1 now, Paddington, near Paddington.
What was your father's job?
My father was a jeweller in Bond Street.
What kind of an upbringing did you have? How many were there in the family, and how comfortable were you?
Oh, we were very comfortable. I had one younger brother, 2 years younger, Colin, and I had a half-sister who was 6 years older than I was, and a half-brother who was 4 years older than I was.
Did you have servants?
Yes.
Do you remember how many?
No, I can't remember. I know I had a nurse.
Now, around about 1903, you moved to Watford, I think.
That's right, yes.
And whereabouts in Watford did you live?
We lived in the Hempstead Road, which was out of Watford, about a mile, on the way to King's Langley, the main road.
And your father carried on working at Bond Street, I presume?
Yes, he carried on there.
What was your first school like? What type of school was it?
It was a smallish preparatory school called Shirley House in Watford. And it was owned by Mr. Campbell, who was not only a very fine teacher, but was also a very skilled carpenter and handyman. And he taught me and all the others how to handle tools, and it was very useful to me for the rest of my life. He was also a good sportsman. He was a scratch golfer, and also he was quite good at cricket. There was one partner who left just about the time that I left, and there was one assistant master. I think, as a matter of fact, as far as I remember, there was also an assistant mistress who took the younger boys.
What sort of academic subjects were taught?
Oh, the usual run of basic subjects, writing, reading, arithmetic, history, and Latin, and French.
And between what ages were you at that school, approximately?
Oh, I was I went there about 1906, I think it was, and I left to go to Charterhouse in 1912.
So you were about 8 when you went?
Yes, possibly a little earlier. I can't quite remember.
Now, when did your interest in aircraft first begin?
Well, of course, at that time, aviation was absolutely in its infancy. And it thrilled me right from the start as a small boy. And I used to spend a lot of my spare time in making models, very few of which flew. Of course, they were driven by elastic in those days. But I was always very interested, and I used to read everything I could lay my hands on about the early flying and the early men who flew. I think the first time I ever saw an aeroplane was, I've forgotten the date now, but it was during the competition which the Daily Mail offered £1,000 for the first flight from London to Manchester. And there were two contestants, Graham White and a Frenchman, Louis Poulain. And it was one afternoon, I saw an aeroplane right away in the distance, and quite low down, and that turned out to be Poulain, who actually won the race. Then, a little later on, when I was allowed out on a bicycle by myself, I used to bicycle to Hendon at weekends wherever I could. It was a country ride practically the whole way. And I used to go to the aerodrome there, which in those days was one of the important centres of flying in England, and they used to give exhibitions. I'm not certain if it was every day, but it was certainly weekends. And I used to go there and watch the early flying.
What was there? You say it was Hendon Aerodrome, but what was there of Hendon Aerodrome then? Was there much of it?
Oh, yes, it was quite big. It's where, of course, a lot later on it was developed. And I think, I don't know if they ever had hard runways, but it was a very big field, more than a field, and they used to have races round the field, which was marked out by pylons. And occasionally they had a little bit of a cross-country race, probably to Bittersea Hill, which was near Stanmore, and then back.
Do you remember any of the exhibitions you saw?
Oh, yes, I... excuse me. I think the ones which really made a most lasting impression, although I remember them all in moderate detail, but this was the first time that a Frenchman, Pegu, gave an exhibition of looping the loop. He'd given, that was on a Sunday, I think, and on the Saturday previously, he'd given an exhibition at Brooklands, which was also a big centre of flying in those days. And it was extremely interesting because after Pegu had done it, quite a lot of the Hendon pilots started looping on machines which I never thought would have stood the strain, but there were no accidents.
That was you saw the second exhibition of looping that there was, as far as you're aware.
Yes. I don't think he'd given exhibitions anywhere else in England before doing his exhibition at Brooklands.
You also had a visit from a German pilot.
Yes. One day while I was there, quite unexpectedly, a German Ettrich monoplane flew over, and that was one of the Tauba type dove, and it was, they were so called, most, a lot of the German machines had these swept back wing tips, which was quite quite a detail of those machines. And he came over and landed and did a bit of flying, but it was caused quite a bit of excitement because he wasn't expected.
Where did he come from?
Don't know where he came from. I think his name was Herr Friedrich, as far as I can remember.
Anything else? What sort of a crowd was there?
Oh, quite a big crowd. I think his entrance was a sixpence, shilling, and 2 and 6. 2 and 6 was in, I think, a stand, and the other two were on the ground, and the cheapest one was further away from where the machines were gathered on the ground. I used to go in the shilling one because it gave me a better view of the machines. Of course, the great Englishman in those days, or one of the great ones, who actually, I think, owned the aerodrome, was Graham White. And he had a school there, and there were various other schools.
Did you see any of the other great English pilots?
Yes. Louis Knowle. I'm trying to think of their names now. I think Merriam. He did most of his flying at Brooklands, but he used to come over to Hendon occasionally. But there were quite a number of different machines there. There was the Graham White box kite, and then there was the Avro, and the Wright.
Was there any system of being allowed to go up? Did they take civilians up?
Yes, they did. They used to give joy rides. I'm not quite certain what it cost, but it was quite cheap. I don't know if it was 7 and 6 or 10 bob just for a flip round.
Did you ever?
No, I never did it.
Would you have liked to?
Yes, in a way I would have. But I left that until later on.
Now, you went to Charterhouse in 1912.
Yes.
What were your first impressions of Charterhouse? How were you treated as a new boy?
Oh, not too badly. You had what they call the new bugs exam by the monitors, the house monitors, and they asked you a lot of questions about the various institutions of the school and the things you must not do and the things you were allowed to do. But they used to also ask some awkward questions, such as naming one of the monitors, what colours has he got? And, matter of fact, he was no good at any games and hadn't got any, and you were likely to put your foot in it. And there was a system of fagging which was not at all hard.
How did it work?
Oh, when any monitor wanted something doing, he used to yell fag, and we all had to rush there, and the first one got it. And it was either to run a message or to do this and that in his study. And there was also each monitor had a study fag who was he was immune from the ordinary fagging, and he had to look after his master's study and keep it clean and neat and that sort of thing.
Did you ever do that job?
Yes. My fag master was a very nice fellow. I don't know if he was originally from Poland or Russia, but his name was Rodakowski, and he was a very fine boxer. And he was a very nice bloke. And I've forgotten, I think it was probably in 1912 or early 13 when he left the school, and he joined, of all places, the Irish Guards, and he changed his name to Rivers. Unfortunately, he was killed in France quite early on.
So your job, you just had to keep their study for them. You mean keep it neat and tidy?
Yes.
How old were the boys you had to work? You were...
Oh, well, they were up to between 17 and 18.
So just in their final...
Yes, on their final... My housemaster was a very nice bloke, rather peculiar. His name was Oswald Latter, and he was quite a well-known and very fine naturalist, and he taught science. But he was a very nice bloke.
Which house were you in?
I was in a house called Robinites, after the original founder of the house, who was a Mr. Robinson. Most of the houses were named after their founders. There was Hodgsonites and Verrites and Weekites and Lockites and Davisites and Pageites. And then there was the headmaster's house, which was called Saunderites. And then there was a house, Gownboys, which was originally, in the old charter house at London, the Scholars, because the original foundation by Thomas Sutton was in London, and it was for, I think, 60 old men and 40 scholars. And, of course, the original or buildings, or most of them, are still extant in Charterhouse Square. It was very badly damaged during the last war, but was very skillfully repaired, and a lot of parts of the buildings were discovered when they started on the foundations and strengthening those. Monks' cells and that sort of thing. See, the school was named after the Carthusian monks.
What did the house system involve? What did being a member of the Robinites mean?
Well, it meant you lived there, you slept there, you had your meals there, and that was really all it was. But the house system was very strong, and there was great competition between the houses for the various sporting events, like football and cricket.
You say you lived there. What were the conditions you lived like in? What sort of dormitories did you have?
Oh, they were very good. You never slept in an open dormitory. If the dormitory, if you like to call it so, was divided up into enclosed cubicles, where you slept, and that's all you really did there. You slept, and there was a hand basin there where you washed.
In each cubicle?
in each cubicle.
What else would there? So there'd be a bed and a handbed. What else would you have?
I beg your pardon?
What else would you have in each cubicle?
I don't think there was anything very much except a chair, because your clothes... I'm not certain if there was a chest of drawers, because your clothes was looked after by the matron, and she dished you out clean clothes every so often, every week.
What about the food you got in the house? What was that like?
The food was really, on the whole, very good. Quite good breakfast, porridge, and then something else, possibly a fried egg or kedgeree or something like that. Then a very good lunch, main course, which was very good and a sweet. And tea was also quite a big meal. It was about 6 o'clock.
How were your lessons organised within the day?
Well, you were when you you'd taken an entrance examination, and that really fixed what class you were going to be in. I was rather fortunate in a way. I got into the upper fourth, which was just about, I think it was the highest form you could get into as a start. And the master in charge was a man called Girdlestone. He was a very old man. He'd founded his house, Girdlestoneites, and it was always known as, by everybody, including the staff, as Duckites, because he used to waddle like a duck. Now, the interesting thing was, this, incidentally, this was a classical form. This was not only my first term, or quarto, as we called them there, but it was his last, and he was the original founder of the house. And he, when he, I don't think he was married at any time, and when he retired, he presented his house to the school, and it's still Girdlestoneites or Duckites. But he was an extraordinary man, and his method of teaching was very odd, because you used to take places in the classroom, and if you had for prep or banco, as it was called there and still is, Latin or Greek, you were supposed to look up in the appropriate dictionary any letters, which any words which you didn't know, and you made a list of them, and when you were called up to construe, you handed your list in. And if you stumbled over a word or construed it wrong, he'd say, "I don't see it on your list. Why isn't it?" And your answer, of course, was, "I thought I knew it, sir." And his invariable answer was, "Go to the bottom and think you're top." But he was a dear old boy, and we were all very sorry to see him go.
How many lessons did you have in the day, and what?
Oh dear, we had.
In what subjects?
Oh, they varied. You see, every morning we went to, first of all, to chapel, and then you went to your classroom, and it might have been anything. And then you had two sessions after breakfast up to lunch, in different classrooms for different subjects. And again in the afternoon, I think you only had one, but I'm not quite certain about that.
What were the teaching methods like for most of them?
Oh, very good indeed. Some of the masters were extremely capable of teaching. Other ones weren't quite as good, and there used to be in some cases a little bit of ragging. But I think on the whole the teaching was very good there. Of course all the masters were qualified teachers with university degrees.
What was discipline like? How did they enforce discipline in the school?
Well, it's difficult to say, but the discipline was very good. I don't think there was really very much undiscipline about it. Incidentally, in the winter, we had one half holiday a week when you played either football or cricket. But in the summer, there were 2 days off. Of course, after lunch, every day there was some either cricket or football, and then that went on to about 4 o'clock. And then you changed and went into your class.
Was there a concentration on academic things or on sporting things? Which
no, I don't think there was any concentration really. We had a very fine record of old Carthusians in the sporting line. In fact, I don't know the date, but in the very early days of the Football Association, Charterhouse used to field a team in the Football League. One of the members of my house, A.G. Bauer, was a very fine footballer and cricketer, and when he left, he was a couple of years older than I was, he played for Chelsea as an amateur for a bit.
Were you on the sporting side or the academic side, or yourself?
Well,
I
was on both, really. I wasn't really academic in many ways. I had a rather an unfortunate time. My second quarter there, which was in the autumn, which was the quarter where all the new boys, or the scholars, those from prep schools who'd earned scholarships, arrived at the school. And that was in the next form up into which I had been promoted after my first term. And that was the remove, classical remove. And I was up against all these young Greek and Latin scholars, which made it pretty hard work. But I managed to get on all right.
The forms were by age, they were by ability then?
By ability. You've got some quite, I won't say old, but older boys in the lower form, because there was the lowest form, which was called the shell, and then there was the under fourth. No, did I say lower fourth? Yes. Then there was the upper fourth. I don't think there were any below that.